Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the show. We are here live, and it's actually going to be our very first ever Football Garbage Time podcast. My name is Hakun Wong. I'm the editor-in-chief of footballgarbagetime.com, and we'll be covering hot topics from around the NFL from week three and so on and so forth in footballgarbagetime.com and our podcast. Today I have Football Garbage Time senior staff writer Ryan Whitfield on the show, and we'll be discussing all sorts of NFL issues from week three. Ryan, you there? Ryan, can you hear me?
Hey, Hakun, can you hear me?
Hey, Ryan, you there?
Yeah, I'm here now.
Okay. Well, that was a, well, I'm gonna have to edit this after the fact. So let's just start over from the beginning.
All right,
instead of giving them 9 minutes of silence. All right, I'm gonna try the intro music again.
Absolutely. See ya.
All right, welcome everybody to the first ever Football Garbage Time podcast. My name is Hakun Wong, and I'll be the editor, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time, and we'll be covering hot topics in the NFL week to week, so check out our site and our podcast. Today, I have Football Garbage Time's senior staff writer, Ryan Whitfield, on the show, and we'll be discussing all sorts of NFL issues from week three. So, Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. My Pats are 3-0, and excited to get this podcast going here.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna be we're gonna bring that up in a little bit because I do have a little bone to pick to you about your Pats, but we're recovering from another weekend of football, and there's a lot of news to get to, so let's get to it. Today we'll be discussing a bunch of hot topics in Week 3, including what happened to the New York Jets, whether the Philadelphia Eagles are better without DeMarco Murray, whether the Pittsburgh Steelers fans should just give up hope now that Ben Roethlisberger is injured, and why the New England Patriots just love scoring so much. So let's just start at the beginning. So what happened to the previous 2-0 Jets and its vaunted defense? The Jets had just come off two straight wins, one over the Cleveland Browns 31-10, and then the Indianapolis Colts 27. That's impressive. Basically, they allowed only 17 points over eight quarters, but then they gave up more than that in just two quarters against the previously 0-2 Philadelphia Eagles, who gave up one of the poorest performances of any NFL football team in week two against the Cowboys that didn't even have Romo and Bryant. So tell me, Ryan, what are your thoughts on that? What do you think happened to the Jets and their defense on week three?
Yeah, so, I went back and looked at it today, and I think it boils down to one thing here, and it's the fact that they're the Jets, you know. obviously, you know, I'm biased, but, I went back and I did a little dig in here. It's a little bit early for Ryan Fitzpatrick's week six implosion to happen.
Right.
But he played an awful game yesterday. It was real bad.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I'll give you a little bit of light applause for that, because I think that was adequate. You're taking a shot at the Jets that way. I totally expected that from a Pats fan. I think, you know, honestly, when it comes right down to it, I mean, tell me what you think about this, but I think the main issue here actually isn't the defense. I think it's their offense, and I agree with you. It's Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I think it's really the turnovers. I mean, if you look at week one against the Browns, they actually allowed more yards and passing and rushing than they did yesterday. And they actually, against the Colts in week two, they allowed more yards. You know, 321 yards in week one, 343 yards in week two. They really only gave up, 231 yards yesterday to the Eagles. It really was the turnovers that I thought was a major problem there. You know, it was a plus four differential in week one, plus four in week two, and lo and behold, they're minus three yesterday.
Yeah, that was one of my key points, was the 231 yards allowed. And, you know, you have the return for a touchdown, so the defense is only on the hook for 17 points. I came into this season being the, you remember my AFC East recap, but, you know, I wrote that the Jets were the team, besides the Pats, that would make the playoffs in the AFC East. I didn't buy into the Dolphins. I still don't buy into Tyrod Taylor and the Bills. And I think for my jab there at Fitzpatrick, that with those weapons around him, anyone can succeed in that offense. I mean, he did something which is basically Stevie Johnson with the Bills a couple years back, and now he has all those guys. So you look at it from 10,000 feet, and it looks like a bad loss at home to the Jets yesterday. But you're without Decker there. You're without Chris Ivory, and your defense only gave 231 points. You know, if Brandon Marshall doesn't make that play before the half, which is just completely inexcusable. And if Fitzpatrick, we can talk about the turnovers, but you got to talk about the timeliness of it. First of all, Marshall, and I know Marshall's been their best weapon this year, but that one pick to Marshall, he's got to have that ball. That ball can't go through your hands. And from a bigger standpoint, all three of their turnovers were inside of Philly's 40-yard line. You know, so if you don't turn I wrote down here, you know, if you don't turn over those three picks and Marshall doesn't fumble that ball, that's a 16-point swing and a 7-point loss. And as far as the defense, I think the biggest stat to show what we're kind of saying here, that this game isn't a statement on that defense. That defense only allowed Philly to go 4-15 on third downs yesterday. They got off the field. They didn't give up the yards. You know, they were battling a bad day from the special teams and offensive unit yesterday.
Right. No, that's a really good point. 4-15. I actually made a note of that myself. I mean, if you look at week one and week two, they actually allowed the Browns go. They actually stopped the Browns from converting half of their third downs. They're 8-16, and then there was 6-14 against the Colts. So, really, they actually did a pretty good job against the Eagles. It's just that, I think, at the end of the day, you had those numbskull-type things that happened, like Brandon Marshall. And in one instance that I thought was just inexcusable, Brandon Marshall trying to lateral the ball while being covered by the entire Philly secondary. I'm not sure exactly what he was trying to accomplish with that, but that's just not a professional football move there.
And he's not even lateraling to a skill guy. You know, he's lateraling
right.
to Cumberland there. The number two
right,
tight
right.
end, I mean, of all people
right.
to be lateraling that ball to him, it's a stupid play. You had the first down. It's not even like it was fourth down. You have the first down. You're on your side of the field. You just don't do that there.
Yeah, I mean, a slow, basically inline blocking tight end. What is he hoping to accomplish with that? Another 3 yards as he falls forward of the ball? It just doesn't make any sense to me either. So I think we agree here
I was going to say, you know, he is the most frustrating person in the NFL for me. I'm sure you have, but if you've watched that A Football Life of him and his struggles with bipolar disorder and him really being an advocate for health issues or mental health issues in the NFL, in a place where people don't like to talk about their emotions and feelings, like, it makes you want to root for the guy. And then you see him just do something like that, and you're so mad, you know? You want to like him, but he's just such a bonehead at the end of the day. It's so hard to root for the guy.
Yep. No, I totally agree. So I think we agree that really the defense was still there. It really was the Jets' offense that really kind of let this one go. I mean, honestly,
absolutely.
At the end of the day, you look at the actual numbers, and the numbers actually look better than what you'd expect. But, you know, I could give Eagles a little bit of credit. I mean, they were actually somewhat effective. I mean, they're not really at the level that we all expected them to be at, but they were at least somewhat effective.
Ryan Matthews was effective.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that's probably going to segue into our next segment. So, the last thing I want to touch on that Jets defense was Revis. And we struggled with this last year a little bit. Obviously, here in New England, you know, anyone who's paying attention to September football in New England knows that Revis didn't play overly well in the first four games of the season last year for the Patriots. And he's definitely off to another slow start. And, you know, after 3 weeks, they have a hamstring issue this week, had a groin issue 2 weeks ago. There's going to be some major questions about the guy's conditioning, and this is not a shot out the door. You know, I'm trying to put my bias aside as much as I can. But he got a ring. He got his last premier contract. So you got to wonder, and you got to hope if you're a Jets fan, that this guy isn't taking his foot off the pedal. Because, I mean, again, to have those two muscle injuries in the first 3 weeks, you know, that's a major red flag for somebody who's really supposed to champion that secondary back there for him.
Right. No, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think he can't do it on his own, but he definitely has. He's had issues with injuries in the past, and who knows what's going to happen going forward. He's an integral part of that defense. We'll see if it makes a difference. Honestly, I actually thought this would be a good matchup because really Philly has gotten nothing going on the ground, and they've only been able to move it in the air, and even though Bradford has not been great. So that kind of leads us into our second topic of the day, and that's, is the Philadelphia Eagles, are they actually better without DeMarco Murray, the leading rusher from last year? You know, Philly actually had 123 rush yards in week three without DeMarco Murray. They had a number of attempts, but, you know, compared to 63 rush yards in week one and a piddly 7 rush yards in week two, you know, what do you think?
I would say absolutely. I never understood the move. I didn't understand, you know, the comments LeSean McCoy made out the door, obviously, shows that there was some kind of rift between him and Chip. And, I mean, that's completely evident. And, you know, I didn't understand when they were targeting Frank Gore. I don't understand DeMarco Murray. You know, you want up-tempo, fast offense, and you're going after more traditional between the tackles kind of guys. I mean, that's a role for LeSean McCoy. That's a role for Darren Sproles. Hell, that's a role for Ryan Matthews if he can stay healthy. And I think you saw that yesterday, that in that offense, if Ryan Matthews can finally stay healthy, Ryan Matthews should be the starter every week for that team this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to see it the same way you do, but I think DeMarco Murray is one of those runners. I mean, he's a great between the tackles runner, but he really did rely on that really great offensive line that the Dallas Cowboys had and still have. One that actually made Randall a star yesterday, actually. So, in all honesty, I really didn't understand, because the way they have their offensive line set up in Philadelphia, it's really not made for that type of power running. It's made, as you said, for kind of an up-tempo West Coast spread offense, quick movements, quick passes, timing plays. That's just not DeMarco Murray, and it's really unfortunate. Now, what's interesting since you raised it, back in week two, when they really had only 7 rush yards on 17 attempts against the Cowboys, and honestly, Murray had only 2 total yards and 13 carries that week, he actually also caught 5 balls for 53 yards in the air. So I think there is a place for him, but I agree with you. I don't think he should be the starter in Philly, and they might actually be better turning to someone like Ryan Matthews.
Yeah, I think, I think that he can all – he does have an underrated ability, obviously referring to Murray there, catching the ball in the backfield. Mm. But I like to call it what is the LeGarrette Blount syndrome, which is, you get a guy who's that physical and that size running downfield like that, people don't want to tackle him. So I think that if you can get him the ball in the flat, give him 5-10 yards to get going, then, that's a role that can use him in. But, it comes to one of the biggest issues, I think, in the NFL, and the same team did it 4 years ago or 5 years ago under Andy Reid. It's the same thing that everyone falls for with the Dolphins every year. It is the one sport above all else, and other sports have the issue too, but especially in this sport, you just can't acquire talent. Because if you ask me who's a better running back, I would still have to give the edge to Murray over Ryan Matthews. But in this offense, I think it's unquestionably Matthews. And, so it's that philosophy of he just brought in people with raw talent. And I feel like Philadelphia doesn't have an identity. It doesn't have a soul right now. It just has a bunch of guys who are trying to learn a system on the fly. And, it just never works out. NFL, that organization continually do it. And they're doing it again Philly this year.
Yeah, and one thing I might say I'll say one nice thing about your Pats, it is a system-type team. You can put people in there, but you need people that actually fit the system. And if they can operate within the bounds of an identity, game planning for particular defenses, game planning for particular offenses, then they can be very successful. But, I feel like Chip Kelly's trying to go a certain way, and he's trying to force a square peg into a round hole.
I agree, and, since we're talking about DeMarco Murray, I think one of the most underrated things in sports or in the NFL that the Cowboys did the last couple of years there, and I think they finally got it, because after a while there they lost an identity. They were searching for a collection of talent, and they finally went the non-sexy route, and they just kept drafting lineman after lineman after lineman and really built an identity. And that defense has been sneakily built over the last couple of years, and you see what they are when Sean Lee's back now. And, that's – so it's not just a Patriot point of view for me, and I know you weren't saying it like that, but, for me, really, I just think that philosophy is the best way to build football teams. And, for better or for worse, you even see it in the AFC's right now with the Buffalo Bills. I don't think Tyrod Taylor is a good quarterback, but he's fitting into that role right now, and that was a smart move by Rex to identify that guy. So, if you have a plan and identity, that's how you build. You just can't bring in a bunch of names, which is what Chip Kelly's tried to do.
Right, I totally agree with that. They basically tried to pull a Yankees over in football here. So let's move on to the next topic, because I want to make sure we get to all 4. But do the Pittsburgh Steelers have a chance without Big Ben? I mean, he's now out with an MCL sprain for 4 to 6 weeks. Thankfully, the MRI shows no ACL tear, which is good news for them. But they're just getting back Le'Veon Bell. They're getting Martavis Bryant back in a week. Is there still hope for the Steelers fans?
It's going to come down to 2 things. First and foremost, how committed is Vic? I think we all know, even at 35, the raw athletic ability and talent he has. But, he it was after a game last year, I think, when he got thrown in, for the Jets, and he said, I guess I should have been more prepared. So if you're getting that Vic who's just looking to cash the check, you know, they could go 0-4. They have a tough stretch of games too. I don't have it in front of me, but
right.
I know they have a tough stretch of four, let alone if they have to go to full six without Ben.
Right, yeah, and in fact, so their next six games are Chargers, Cardinals, Chiefs, Bengals, Raiders, and Browns. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they came out of that 2-4. I mean, with Vic at the behind center.
I agree, and especially the Raiders are sneakily good this year, and people aren't paying enough attention to what they're doing out there. That defense with Khalil Mack is legit. David Carr and Amari Cooper, you know, are building a nice chemistry out there, so that could be a loss. Chiefs obviously can be a loss. They could lose to San Diego coming off all this. And then the Cardinals, I think, are a legit front-running team in the NFL. So,
Yeah, certainly.
One of the things they're going to have to do, and, you know, I was looking up the numbers earlier, I'm pretty surprised by this, but, you know, hopefully that defense can surprise some people because that was what was supposed to be the Achilles heel this year. But, you know, they're not as bad as everyone thought they were going to be. They're 14 in yards per game right now, and they're 6 in points per game. They're only giving up 17.3 points per game. Now, granted, you played, you know, St. Louis this week, who helped out by only giving you 6 points on your doctrine there. But you know, even the Patriots week one only hung 28 on them, and you know they put up 40 back to back. So that defense has surprisingly played pretty well so far.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I think what it comes right down to for Vic, though, is Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator there. I think they need to change the playbook. They need to make sure it's manageable for Vic. They got to simplify. I mean, you know, Big Ben is a certain type of guy. He's big. He's tough to take down. Broken pocket doesn't bother him. He doesn't get flustered by that. I mean, Vic is going to need a simpler offense. It doesn't require as much time. I think Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell will be key. Getting the ball to them quickly and not requiring him to make multiple reads that will be important.
Yeah, I would say the game plan is either, you know, a quick passing game mixed with establishing the run quickly so that you can get a couple plays off the play action where you can get Martavis and you can get Antonio Brown into the second level. But, you know, you can't sit there and do 5-step drops. And, you know, remember, even worst case scenario for them right now is that, you know, Vic isn't the most isn't usually the healthiest or, you know, most durable quarterback. So if he goes down in 2 weeks, you know, with another hand injury or another wrist or rib injury because how tiny he is, you know, then they're a whole other world of trouble.
Right. I totally agree with that. I think that we agree they're going to have a challenge ahead of them. I think that they need to come out of this 6 weeks, if Big Ben is out for 6 weeks, at least 3-3 to have a shot. They'll leave him at 5-4 on the season when Big Ben returns. I think anything less than that is going to be an uphill battle for them.
I agree, absolutely.
So before we run out of time, I got to needle you a little bit here, Ryan. You know, why do the New England Patriots just continue to run up the score? I mean, like, I understand against the Pittsburgh Steelers, they put up 28 because they had to win 28-21. That makes sense. Buffalo Bills were better than advertised. They had put up 40 points, but they only won by 8. But the lowly Jacksonville Jaguars, 51 points, a 50-burger, what's that all about? I mean, at 51-10, Brady, Gronk, and Edelman were still in the game. What's going on there? Are the Patriots just jerks, or is there some reason that they're out there?
Yeah, this is what you asked for. you know, I wrote an article on the site, you know, a couple months back, and it said, as Patriot fans, you know, it's time to accept being the villain. You know, one of my favorite things I heard last year was James Ahedebo, which he said as if he had never been here before, which is funny because he was here in 2011 and we lost to the Giants. But, you know, he wrote before the Detroit game last year that it's spooky going down to Foxborough, and you have to go down that long two-lane highway on Route 1 in the middle of the woods where Gillette is, and it's, you know, during October, it's dark, and it's not very well lit, and it's scary, and it's just, you know, it's the red hourback syndrome. Everyone comes here. Now you guys are worried about warm Gatorade, and they were pumping Scott Zolak in the radio broadcast into your headsets. You know, and it's just fun, and, you know, for all they'll say the right things, and they'll tell you they don't care and they don't let this get to them, it's the same thing they did in 07. There were games in 07 that we were still airing it out to Randy Moss with 5 minutes to go. It is what they're going to do this year. Belichick and Brady are scorned, and that this is what they do. You know, they're joking around the radio stations here calling us the Patriots. 2016 scorched earth trip. So, you know, we're gonna do it every week, so everyone get used to it.
Okay, well, in your honor and in the Patriots' honor, I'll send one of these your way. But honestly, though, I get it. I get it. I mean, first of all, it is a little bit of an FU tour. They're a good team. And staying in rhythm is important. You know, you getting back up some time is important, but staying in rhythm is important. So I don't think they're being jerks. I think they're keeping them in sync, getting them the reps. LeGarrette Blount, you know, I mean, quite frankly, they have a real gem in Deion Lewis now. So really, they can just run it up, and it really won't impact their bottom line.
Yeah, like I said that earlier, and people around here think that we have a power running game. We don't have a power running game, but you're not going to get secondary guys in the secondary or linebackers even to tackle LeGarrette Blount when you're getting blown out by 30 points in the fourth quarter. So, you know, even if they're not throwing the ball, they're still sticking it to you because they're running the 260-pound halfback at you.
Yeah, no, I saw that, and Tom Brady really wasn't airing it out at the end. They were just kind of running it to kill clock, and it just so happened that the Jaguars are so bad that they kept scoring, is how I saw it. So we're actually run down to the end of time here, and looks like that's going to be the final horn on our podcast for the week. So we'll be back again. Thanks again, Ryan, for being on here. Don't forget, everybody, to check out Ryan Whitfield's articles on footballgarbagetime.com. You want to give everybody your Twitter handle?
Yeah, it's at Ryan Whitfield, N-E, and that's N-E as in New England.
Terrific. And you can follow us at Football Garbage Time at FB Garbage Time, and then go to footballgarbagetime.com for more information. We will see you here next week. Thanks a lot, Ryan. And until next week, enjoy the rest of the NFL games.